Virtus is a Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. Welcome back to Virtus on this Friday morning, and on Friday mornings here on Virtus, we turn to C.S. Lewis and we think through some of the things that he thought through. Today I'm going to be reading from his essay entitled Modern Man and His Categories of Thought. And as we have seen, Lewis seems to be writing today. Although Lewis was writing 80 years ago, it seems as if he is writing to us today. That's just profound, how profound his thought was. And that's how, just some of the connections he made, some of the implications he made. So Modern Man and His Categories of Thought. He says, the earliest missionaries, the apostles, preached to three sorts of men, to Jews, to those Judaizing Gentiles, and to pagans. In all three classes, they could count on certain predispositions which we cannot count on in our own audience. All three classes believed in the supernatural, and all three were conscious of sin and feared divine judgment. The world we must try to convert shares none of those predispositions. In the last 100 years, the public mind has been radically altered. In producing that alteration, the following causes seem to me that to have been at work. And now Lewis is going to go through five things, five categories in which our modern minds naturally fall into. He says, number one, a revolution in the education of the most highly educated classes. This education was formerly based throughout Europe on the ancients. Thus, in the Christian and skeptic alike, there was a strong infusion of the better elements of paganism. Even those who lacked piety had some sympathetic understanding of pietas. I think that's a reference to Virgil's Aeneid way back in the first century. It was natural to men so trained to believe that valuable truth could still be found in an ancient book. That was natural to them. It was natural to them to reverence tradition, values quite different from those of modern industrial civilization were constantly present to their minds. Even where Christian belief was rejected, there was still a standard which contemporary ideals could be judged. The effect of removing this education has been to isolate the mind in its own age, to give it, in relation to time, that disease in which, relation to space, we call provincialism. The mere fact that St. Paul wrote so long ago is, to the modern man, presumptive evidence against his having uttered important truths. So that's the first thing that he says, that there's been a radical alteration in the education of the public mind. You know, we used to reverence tradition, we used to reverence the ancients, we used to reverence old ideas, but we have this disease, which he calls provincialism, this desire just to have things, the only knowledge that is valuable to us is the thing that is right in front of us. The most modern idea is perceived to be the best idea. Like he says, the mere fact that St. Paul wrote so long ago is to a modern man presumptive evidence against his having uttered important truths. So because the Apostle Paul wrote so long ago, he could not have said anything relevant to us today. Lewis says another thing that we as moderns, we have a chronological snobbery, how we look back at the past with contempt, with snobbishness, thinking that we are much more enlightened than them. And that wasn't how it was. You know, when people wanted to figure out things about the present world, they used to go back to older thinkers. And we have such contempt with old things in our modern day. It's pretty evident in our education. We're not nearly as in touch with the classics. The Iliad, the Odyssey, those types of things that people 100 years ago were. Number two, he says, the emancipation of women. He says, I'm not, of course, saying that this is a bad thing in itself. I'm only considering one effect it has had, in fact. One of the determining factors in social life is that, in general, men like men better than women like women. Hence, the freer women become, the fewer exclusive male assemblies there are. Most men, if free, retire frequently into the society of their own sex. Women, if free, do this less often. In modern social life, the sexes are more continuously mixed than they were in earlier periods. This probably has had many good results, but it has had one bad result. Among young people, obviously, it reduces the amount of serious argument about ideas. When the young male bird is in the presence of a young female, it must display its plumage. Any mixed society thus becomes a scene of wit, banter, and anecdote. Of everything in the world, rather than prolonged, rigorous discussion of ultimate issues or of those serious masculine friendships in which such discussion arises. So he's saying because, you know, there has been much progress in the emancipation of women, it's had a downside in which in mixed society, men just want to show off to get the attention of women. He says, just like birds have to display its plumage when there's a young female, any mixed society, this becomes a scene of wit, banter, and anecdote. And instead of discussing ultimate issues, instead of having rigorous discussion, prolonged rigorous discussion of ultimate issues, or those serious masculine friendships, it's reduced to just trying to impress the ladies. And I think, I would imagine, kind of reading between the lines, Lewis has in mind here his group, the Inklings, with Tolkien and with other people, which was mainly a male society, and they used to discuss ideas, and they used to discuss their works and those types of things. So I think that that's kind of what's going on here. Number three, and once again, I'm just reading selections in each one of these. So if you were to get this book, he expands this, each one of these categories a little more. So I'm just reading selections of these things to keep things short. But number three, he calls developmentalism or historicism. He says, I distinguish sharply between the noble discipline called history and the fatal pseudo-philosophy called historicism. And the ISM, the ism, is really important on that. What I call developmentalism is the extension of the evolutionary idea far beyond the biological realm. In fact, its adoption as a key principle of reality. To the modern man, it seems simply natural that an ordered cosmos should emerge from chaos, and that life should come out of inanimate, reason out of instinct, civilization out of savagery, and virtue out of animalism. So he says it just seems natural for us to assume things like the Big Bang, quote-unquote Big Bang, that we've been taught that nothing came from that everything came from nothing. That's just a priori. That's just assumed. That's a self-evident truth. He says this developmentalism in the field of human history becomes historicism. The belief that the scanty and haphazard selection of facts we know about history contains an almost mystical revelation of reality. So he's saying that this developmentalism, this historicism, almost leads to this mystical, explanation of reality. You know, we can't really tell you exactly how everything came from nothing. It just is a mystery. It just happened. That's just how it was. And what I want to pick up on here, what Lewis calls historicism, I want to kind of redirect and talk about scientism. And this is very much related. Scientism, you know, scientism is not the cold construct of the scientific method. Scientism is more about the narrative kind of supported by some scientific language. Scientism is more about let's just trust the experts. You know, let's just bow down to what the science is telling us. We have to believe in science. Well, you don't believe in science. You do science. Scientists are the ones who bring us theory. Scientists are the ones who bring us the conclusions. And all science demands interpretation. You know, science just by itself says nothing. It demands interpretation. So, but this is really important, especially in light of everything going on in our world with COVID and those types of things. I want to just read his definition of historicism, but replace it with scientism. So here's what Lewis says. Here's what scientism is. I'm adding in that word scientism. Excuse me. The belief, here's scientism, the belief about the the belief that the scanty and haphazard selection of the facts we know about science contains an almost mystical revelation of reality. And that's really what we've seen with especially the COVID stuff, especially with other things, I would argue, to an extent with climate, quote unquote, climate change or global warming, whatever you want to call it. It really is more about scientism, not so much science itself. It's scanty, haphazard selection of facts we know about science containing almost a mystical revelation about reality. So that is a historicism from Lewis's perspective, but I also think that is a really good definition of scientism. Number four, he says, what we may be called proletarianism in its various forms ranging from strict Marxism to vague democracy. Proletarianism in its various forms ranging from strict Marxism to vague democracy. And I kind of associate this with more of the left-wing tendencies today, what we might call leftism or maybe liberalism, whatever you want to call it. But I think that these, what Lewis says here lines up with those things today. He says a strong anti-clericalism has of course been a feature of this continental proletarianism almost from the beginning. And he goes on to say that these people, they are convinced that whatever may be wrong in the world, it cannot be with themselves. Someone else must be to blame for every evil. Hence, when the existence of God is discussed, they by no means think of him as their judge. On the contrary, they are his judges. If he puts up a reasonable defense, they will consider it and perhaps acquit him. They have no feelings of fear or guilt or awe. They think from the very outset of God's duties to them and not their duties to him. And God's duties to them are conceived in not in terms of salvation, but in purely secular terms, social security, prevention of war, and a higher standard of life. And the reason I associate that with kind of the leftist narrative today is kind of we see that. You know, God is not considered to be a judge. We are God's judges. We don't want anything from God, things like salvation, but we want things like free college or social security or prevention of war or a higher standard of life, free health care, whatever you want to say there. And I think that what Lewis is talking about back then is pretty applicable to our time today. And lastly, he says, number five, man is practical. There's a practicality towards in our categories of thought. He says, man has become narrowly practical as the irrational animals. Man is becoming as narrowly practical as the irrational animals. Instinct. Moving by instinct is essentially what he's talking about. He says, in lecturing to popular audiences, I have repeatedly found it is almost impossible to make them understand that I recommend Christianity not because I recommend Christianity because I thought its affirmations to be objectively true. So Lewis is trying to evangelize. He's trying to speak to these audiences and saying that Christianity is true, and therefore you should believe it. And he says they are simply not interested in the question of truth or falsehood. They only want to know if it will be comforting or inspiring or socially useful. And I have experienced this in my own life when I was helping out with college ministry. We used to go on campus and just really ask worldview questions. And you could tell that these students had no care for truth or falsehood. They had no care for truth objectively or falsehood objectively. They only cared about, you know, the way that things are perceived. They only cared about the way how that's going to make people feel. They cared about social issues. But those social issues were not grounded in truth. So I have definitely seen that in my own life, and I'm sure you have seen that in your own life. You know, back in the day, the apologetic method for the Christian apologist was to prove the truthfulness of Christianity. But people nowadays, they don't care if Christianity is true. They only care if it's good for the world. They don't really care if Jesus rose from the dead. They only care about, well, what has Christianity done for the world? We are increasingly living in a time where one, you know, cultural commentator I listen to says that we live in the negative world, where Christianity is continuously being assumed to be an evil on the world, a blight on the world. And Lewis goes on to conclude things like this. He goes on to say much more things, but here's just one thing he says. He says, all these things considered, these five things we've considered, he says, such, in my opinion, are the main characteristics of the mental climate in which a modern evangelist has to work. One way of summarizing it would be to say that I sometimes wonder whether we shall have to reconvert men to real paganism as a preliminary to converting them to Christianity. If they were Stoics or Orphics or Mithraists, or better still, peasants worshiping the earth, our task might be easier. So with those concluding remarks, Lewis really is getting at the idea that these five things that I've talked about that Lewis has led us to really are indications of secularism, a stripping of the God out of the world, a removing the divine out of the world. So where, you know, we can talk to people like pagans and have some touch point with the divine, some touch point with sin, some touch point with tradition. We don't have that in secularism. Secularism cannot give you those things. When it strips God out of everything, you're really left with nothing. That's why Lewis says that we have to lead people to paganism first and foremost in order to convert them to Christianity. There are so many touch points between Christianity and between paganism. We can have that conversation, but with a secularist, it's really pretty tough to have those conversations. So that's Lewis, that's C.S. Lewis, Modern Man and His Categories of Thought. I hope you enjoyed that. I know that I did when I first read it. I marked up the book like crazy, highlighted like crazy. And I encourage you to check out that book from Lewis, Present Concerns, his journalistic essays. Thanks for being with me today. Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtus is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.